Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's program, on June 24th, 2019, the United States Supreme Court held that prohibiting registration of scandalous or immoral trademarks violates the First Amendment. These decisions mean that the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office can no longer deny registration on the basis that others may find the mark offensive. Today, from IPS Legal Group, an intellectual property law firm here in Florida, we have managing attorney Joycelyn Brown, and we're going to be talking about trademarks and copyrights. Just because you got a domain name from GoDaddy and registered your business with the Secretary of State, that does not mean you have rights to the business name or website domain name. But first, I'd like to welcome and introduce the legal panelists for today, Eric Yankwit.
Good to see you again here on the radio, Phil.
I almost said Yankwit.
You almost did, and I would have almost said thank you.
And Gary Singer is on his way, but the way traffic is in Florida, he should get here hopefully before the end of the program.
Traffic in Florida?
Yeah, can you imagine that? Also, I'd like to remind our listeners, we are now podcasting on most major podcast sites. Just Google Legal News and Review Podcast, Apple. We come right up. And on Thursdays, you could tune in and watch us live on Facebook Live, like right now. You can see past programs as well. Just Google Facebook, Legal News in Review, and you'll see we're recording today at the Kelly Ustahl Building in their very own mock courtroom. You talk about resources. They built a $10 million building dedicated to justice. If you've been severely injured by somebody else's negligence, go to justiceforall.com. That's justiceforall.com. Joycelyn Brown, managing attorney from IPS Legal Group. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Philip. How are you?
Great, and welcome to Legal News and Review.
Thank you for having me.
You know, the United States Supreme Court ruled that the Patent and Trademark Office can no longer deny registration on the basis that others may find the mark offensive. This can be a game changer for many, but as an example, if I did not like the name of a sports team like the Redskins, which I think is offensive, you know, to American Indians, I wouldn't buy their jersey.
So I think the interesting thing is there's a difference between freedom of speech with respect to this recent decision by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right.
And what I want to note, which is the most interesting, is that all nine justices agreed to the decision. All nine of them. And there were no.
That makes it pretty strong.
It's
no wiggle room there.
There's no wiggle room.
Liberal and conservative.
Liberal and conservative agreed alike.
Seems like a free speech issue for me.
Well, I mean, the law's been in place since 1905, right?
Right.
Naturally, there have been a lot of changes in the law over the course of these 100 years, right? There have been a lot of changes in the law just in general. But if we look at the progression as far as what we deem to be scandalous, what we deem to be immoral, what we deem to be offensive, it's changed. And with respect to the comment regarding the Redskins, our sensitivity as a nation has also changed, right?
Well, we used to have strict regulations, the FCC that governs us. I mean, when I was growing up, you couldn't see Marianne from Gilligan's Island. You couldn't see her belly button or I Dream of Jeannie. God forbid they shut down the whole production.
I lived to see their belly button. That was like the highlight of my day.
I remember when I was younger, I used to, you know, watch the late night television programs.
Right.
And I even remember when Joan Rivers did her little stint of late night way back in the day.
I remember that too.
But, you know, you couldn't say derriere. Right, you had to use words like onion.
Right,
right. You couldn't say the word that I'm not going to say on the radio right now. But you couldn't say those words.
Seven dirty words in television.
Well, that's George Carlin's bit. Yeah. That's still you can't say those seven dirty words.
I'm pretty sure you can say a few of them.
I think some of them are allowed. But But the whole point is there have been a lot of different changes in the law regarding what is deemed to be First Amendment speech, right? And you know the saying used to be like, it's offensive when I see it. I'll know it when I see it.
Right.
But now it's a little bit more clearly defined, and there's a lot more allowance for what falls under First Amendment protection. Now, the key thing to take away from the Supreme Court case is that yes, you know, certain words with alternate spellings, right, will be allowed because they are deemed to be free speech.
Mm-hmm.
But things that are still sexually explicit,
right,
still not allowed.
Still
hands off. So the United States Patent and Trademark Office, the Trademark Office, will still have the ability to reject those applications, right?
So commercial speech is different than personal speech.
Exactly. So there are still some changes. That are going to be made coming down the pipeline.
Right.
But at the end of the day, we have a clear line of what's allowed, what is deemed to be free speech, but there's still a very vast amount of information, words, phrases that still falls under the offensive meter.
I see. So I'm just going to switch gears on you a little bit and just ask you, so what are the differences between like a business filing and a trademark rights? What is that all about?
Right. I mean, if I went to Secretary of State in Florida, got my business registered, and go to GoDaddy, put my dollar down and get the domain name, I own it, don't I?
You can own the domain name. You can operate a website under the domain name. If you're doing business under that name, you have certain common law rights to use that name. But if that name is a federal trademark by another company, by another entity somewhere in the nation, then you are running into trademark infringement, right? That might be an issue. And the person who owns that trademark or some variation thereof may be able to come and seize the domain due to trademark infringement.
So let's take an example.
Yeah.
Like, say I had Apple Accounting.
Would
Apple computers have an issue with me? Would the iPhone all of a sudden knock on my door?
Not necessarily, right?
Because it's not in the same.
It's not in the same classification. So there are 45 classifications with the USPTO. Okay,
right.
Though these are international classifications. So the countries that are party to the Madrid Protocol, those countries have all agreed that all goods and services fall under the umbrella 45 classifications. Classifications 1 through 34 relate to goods. Classifications 35 through 45 relate to services. Right? So Apple Accounting, it's a service, right? It's a business service that you're providing. But an Apple phone is a product.
Right.
And that product falls under a completely different classification. So that not necessarily, but if you were to come out with a phone, let's say you want to come out with the orange phone.
Oh.
Right? Not the Apple phone, but the orange phone. And you have the same kind of look and feel as Apple.
Right.
Well, then you're kind of teetering into trade dress, not necessarily trademark because it's a different name, but you're teetering into trade dress. You're teetering into the realm of consumer confusion.
Well, it's like that Eddie Murphy movie Coming to America when Mr. McDougal, well, McDougal's, you know, hamburger place.
So classic, right?
That is still a classic movie to this day.
Yeah.
No, that is. It stands the test of time.
So, do you have to be a U.S. citizen to have a federal trademark?
No, you do not have to be a U.S. citizen. However, just recently, the USPTO has changed their rules. It comes into effect August 1st. They announced it in May, where if you are a foreign entity and you own a foreign good or service that's being marketed or sold in the United States, you do have to be represented by a U.S. attorney.
Oh, so it keeps us employed.
It keeps us employed.
That's a rule I like. I see.
Yeah, that's fairly new. Not that many people know.
No, I was not aware.
Not that many people know at all. It they announced it in May, and the rule goes into effect on August the 1st.
Yeah, more people should be aware that they should hire attorneys. That's probably a good.
I'm sorry, they're not attorneys. They're problem solvers.
Problem solvers.
I love problem solvers.
We are problem solvers. People, yeah. I recently have come to the realization that people do not hire lawyers because they have a legal problem.
Right.
People hire lawyers because they have a personal problem.
That's so true.
Yeah. I have a lot of problems with people also. So let me make sure I understand too, because I just want to make sure I understand where China fits in. Because
okay.
I always hear about, and I'm an accountant also, and I have a lot of clients of mine that
he's
constantly tell me.
He's my accountant as well, does my taxes.
And he admits that in public,
that's
so
right.
I appreciate
kept
it.
Kept me out of jail.
They're constantly asking, if I do business and I get a trademark here in the States, China is just going to copy it and mimic the item or mimic the service or whatever it is, and they're going to do it cheaper, and then we're going to import those goods. And how do we enforce my trademark here in China? So how do I give them an answer?
The answer is it depends, right?
Love that answer.
It's the best answer in the book.
It's not just for underwear.
Not at all. No, the reality is, you have to be active. You have to actively try to protect your product, to protect your trademark, to protect your brand, right? So if you have a product that you know it might be sold or marketed in China, then go through the United States Patent and Trademark Office, through the Patent Cooperation Treaty, and file a patent for your product in China if you want to protect.
So you file your patent here, the U.S. patent, you duplicated it in China and pay the fees.
You file it in China, correct.
You have to hire a Chinese attorney.
You have to hire a Chinese attorney.
See, they got employment also.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. So it's all about keeping everybody employed, right?
But the new treaty, like with Mexico, has real teeth. Like if they have knockoffs of Louis Vuitton bags, mm-hmm. which is apparently popular to do, and they now can go to jail, not just be fined, it has real teeth. They can actually be incarcerated as well. Now, that's the Mexico treaty. And it's about time they do something like that to protect products.
The thing is, you know, we live in a society. We live in a society where we want what everyone else has, but we want, there are many consumers that want to pay cheaper prices for it. So you can penalize the seller.
Right.
But the best thing to do actually is to try to provide other products and services to U.S. consumers that they can afford that are protected under the patent laws, protected under the trademark laws here that won't be copied. But then also for people that do have products, that do provide services, do what you need to do to protect those products internationally. File patents in the other countries, file trademarks in the other countries, but more importantly, file those trademarks here in the U.S.
But sometimes it's taken to an extreme. Let's take a look at the NFL, Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Every year there's some bar, some of them big franchises, but some of them are just mom and pops that use the name unauthorized Super Bowl party, and they get a cease and desist letter. And do they do that to retain the rights, or they do that just to be mean?
Combination of both. It depends.
I would say they do it to protect the mark, but the way that they do it does come across as being mean, right? Because the masses don't understand. They're just saying, hey, listen, there's a game. I want to watch it. There's 50 people in my community that want to come. What's the best way to get people to come and have a drink, have a bite to eat? Let's go ahead and let's advertise, right? But the thing about a trademark, if you don't protect your ownership, meaning how it's used and when it's used,
right,
you end up diluting the your own mark.
So you give up certain rights then?
Not necessarily giving up rights, but you make it easier for somebody else to challenge the use. And so the NFL is simply being consistent.
How long does it take for a trademark actually to be registered?
From the time of filing to the actual registration, mm-hmm. assuming that no issues come up or anything like that, you're looking at in a perfect world, you're looking at about 6 months, right? So you file within 3 months from filing, a trademark examiner is is assigned to it. The examiner says, hey, these are some things that I found wrong with it, right? Go ahead and correct it. If everything's, you know, all nice and easy, then they say, hey, we're going to go ahead and issue it for a notice of publication, meaning it's published to the official gazette. And then from there, it's published for potential opposition and then registration.
If I wanted to copyright or, excuse me, trademark Yankowit Law, right? I'll have to have a specimen, I understand.
What are you talking about now?
Not that guy. A real world example of how we're using the mark on goods or services?
That is correct.
And what constitutes as a trademark specimen? What is it?
So if you have a good, you need to have a an actual photo, a specimen would be a photograph, digitally copied, some sort of evidence, right, of how the mark is being used. So if you provide legal services,
okay,
right? You provide legal services, you need to show how are you using your logo or your name in association with those legal services. Do you have it on a website? Mm-hmm. Do you have it on a building? Right? How are you actually using it? How do you let the USPTO know for sure that this is something that's where you're not just sitting on it?
So
right?
You mean sitting on it, the park bench with Eric's name and business logo?
And people are sitting on my logo.
That's right. That constitutes as a real used would be recognized as a trademark specimen?
Not necessarily, because it's not that it being placed on a park bench, right, is not in association with the actual services that you provide.
I see.
The specimen has to be directly linked to
business cards, letterhead.
Exactly.
Websites.
Exactly. But now if you have an actual product, right? If you let's say your business is Eric's Cups, right? And let's say you sell
cups.
Cups. You sell,
imagine.
You're selling sports cups, right? For going to sporting right. events and stuff
to
like that.
For the Super Bowl.
Oh,
right?
Here we go.
Well, then in that instance, you would need to provide pictures of the actual cup. Showing a link to the website or mm-hmm. Would not suffice. You have to physically show that it's on an actual product.
I see.
So collaterals like brochures, things like that, that's admissible?
For services. But for an actual product,
you have to show the product. I see. So now when I go onto SunBiz and I register a new corporation, I notice that there's a button, so to speak, an online form that you can fill out for
right.
a trademark.
Mm-hmm.
That's good only in Florida.
Correct.
So why would I choose to do it only in Florida versus the rest of the country and the rest of the world? I mean, I don't get it.
Some people don't really understand, right? They think, hey, I filed a trademark. But
right.
I always ask them, did you file a trademark with the United States Patent and Trademark Office? They say, oh, no, I just filed a trademark in the state. Well, that gives you rights to the trademark use in that state. It does not necessarily give you rights to... If we're here in Florida, it doesn't necessarily give you rights to Mississippi.
Wow.
Right. So I pay the fee because it must be a smaller fee mm-hmm. for Florida versus having it nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a system that I can do that for worldwide, or do I have to go to each separate country?
There is a system that allows you to file very easily, click of a button, you can file worldwide. First, you file your national application, which would be in the United States, so you file a national application.
And how much is that approximately?
It depends on the country. The filing fees, it depends on the country and also depends on the conversion rate of the day. Those fees are calculated via Swiss francs.
Okay.
So you select however many countries you want to file in, and you file your application all at once.
Oh, so you can pick and choose the country.
Is there
an all button that you can choose the whole world?
It's only the countries that are
or are members of that are
members of the Madrid Protocol, correct?
But you can do for all.
You can do for the
all
you,
those Madrid
all
countries.
Of all of those countries. The countries that are not participants, you have to go into those countries individually and file individually there.
For a trademark registration to remain valid, how long does it actually last?
Trademark registrations can last in perpetuity. If you think about Budweiser, you think about Coca-Cola, right? What is important is that, there are the United States Patent and Trademark Office has certain time periods where you do have to let them know, hey, I'm still using this particular trademark. This is how I'm still using the trademark to have the continued registration.
And can ownership of a trademark be assigned or transferred from one person or entity to another?
Of course, it's property. Just like how you transfer real property, right? You can transfer ownership of a trademark. You can license the ownership. You can license the use of a trademark. And that happens often. Even if you think about the NFL works with certain partners. We were talking about the NFL earlier.
Right.
So let's say you have a vendor who's working with the NFL, that vendor has to provide the NFL a license for the NFL to use the name. But it's a one-way license. It's not reciprocal.
For business owners out there, when they file a trademark renewal, do they have to file a Section 8 declaration of continued use form separately?
Yes, when they file their continuation, there's an online system that allows for a user to file everything all together. Mm-hmm. But you file that with the USPTO, showing them, hey, I'm still using this trademark. This is how I'm still using the trademark, and that it allows for you to continue with the use of the trademark. And you can also file for uncontested use of the trademark.
Now, you also do patents. You're known as that. Matter of fact, you're an engineer, correct?
I am an engineer.
Well, you don't seem like one at all.
People say that all the time.
Really? You got a personality.
People say
I'm
that
I'm sorry
all
to my engineer
time.
Friends.
People say that all the time. When I tell them that I'm a patent attorney, they're just like, really? Like, yeah, I have a...
Yeah, you would never know.
Well, you chose a very complicated practice. Let's face it. There's so much complexities. But when should I begin investigating the patentability of an idea?
As soon as you come up with the idea.
Write it down on a napkin? I mean, seriously.
No, so the thing about it is every single day people come to me and they say, I have this really great idea. I want to proceed with marketing. I have this really great idea. I want to proceed with licensing. Well, did you do a patent search? Do you know if there's something else that's already out there? Well, I looked online. I looked on the internet. I did a Google search. I haven't seen anything. There are literally thousands, if not millions, of patents that are out there that have never made it to market, mm-hmm. or products that were patented before our generation that were ahead of its time, right?
Right.
But they still classify as prior art, so you wouldn't be able to get a patent for it.
And how do you go about enforcing a patent infringement or a trademark infringement?
So with trademark infringement, you know, cease and desist, patent infringement, you better do your research first to make sure that it really is patent infringement. The United States Patent and Trademark Office, they've set up some barriers, right, against what they call patent trolls.
Yeah, what is that? I've heard about patent trolls.
These are people who just, lawyers, who just send these cease and desist.
Oh, so they're not people, they're lawyers.
They're lawyers who send...
It hurts when it's true like that.
It does hurt when it's true.
I couldn't resist. Go ahead.
But they send out these cease and desist letters that don't really have any teeth, right?
Right.
So first, any lawyer who is about to send out a cease and desist letter, do the research first. Make sure that it actually is infringement or potential infringement, and then proceed.
So I've been using my business name for 100 years already.
Okay.
Is there a need for me to run out to go get it trademarked? Or is it just when I smell trouble?
There's always a need for you to go get a trademark. I liken it to if you have children, right? And would you get a birth certificate for your child?
Not if I didn't want them anymore.
So if you have a business name, would you get a trademark? Not if you don't want it anymore.
I guess so. Sorry, kids.
Now there is always going to be that one-off issue where somebody has a challenge or an issue with the trademark,
right?
And you know, let's say, take for example, somebody has a trademark, they've been using it for 10 years, they never filed the trademark for it. Somebody else comes and files a trademark. Well, then you have to really kind of show, like, hey, I was using this first, and this is how long I was using it. And then it comes down to what's the decision going to be between the trademark office.
My final question is the technology of apps.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has them on their phone. They now have them on their TV. Are apps patentable? Are they trademark? Or because it's an algorithm written, is it copyright?
All three.
Oh.
but again, it depends, right?
Yeah.
So it depends on the app itself. So the name of the app is definitely trademarkable, right? The badge icon can either be protected by copyright, you know, it's natural,
right.
it's a work of art, or it can also be protected by a trademark. And then the algorithm, the coding, is protected by copyright law. And then the actual mobile app itself, depending upon how novel it is, and what it actually does and how it interfaces, may also seek actual patent protection.
Interesting. I mean, you know, it's such a growth industry.
It is.
It's been really fascinating. And, you know, we're running out of time. So how's the best way to get in contact with you?
The best way to contact me is to contact my office. We have two primary numbers. We have our 800 number, which is 800-305-5361. Again, that's 800-305-5361. 5361. And then we also have our main line that runs into the office, which is 786-539-5098.
I mean, you're traveling. You just got back from out of the country.
I did.
As well.
I did.
I also like your website. It's very easy. IPSLegalGroup.com.
Yep.
That's IPSLegalGroup.com. There's some great information on there, not only about your firm, but people's frequently asked questions as well.
We also have a blog. So we post content to the blog twice a month, on the 1st and the 15th of every month. The information that's on the blog is basically in response to the questions that we get from our clients and potential clients.
The problem with a blog is that people don't want to read. They want to hear. So we're happy to help you with some podcasting if you need that.
Well, we're moving into that direction.
Absolutely. It's great. I love podcasting. And it does go by too fast. You're very dynamic. You're a very passionate attorney, and you care about your clients as well as your mom.
Yes.
And, I hear the same love when you discuss about your practice.
I absolutely love what I do. I am that nerdy engineer that loves patent work.
You should see the smile on your face when you're talking about it. Truly. I mean, I know you can't see it in radio land, but you can hear it.
Yeah.
Well, it is drive time, so put those cell phones down. Sincerely, you're gonna be there in 5 minutes, 10 minutes. You can wait to look at your text,
it's
right?
It's now a primary offense. Right? Now they can pull you over just for that.
That's a good thing.
For looking at your phone.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, texting and driving.
Yeah, texting while you're driving. Absolutely. Yeah. Remember, be safe and
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to BeLegalBuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for Legal News and Review. Remember, be legal.